Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
A word from our sponsor. The month of July is heating up with a ton of exciting sports action, and BetOnline is where you can find it. From the NBA Finals to baseball's marquee matchups, including prop bets and futures, BetOnline has all the latest odds, news, and information for all your online sports betting needs. So visit the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So before the next tip-off, face-off, or pitch, head on over to BetOnline and start playing today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. We don't start the show until today. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bros Pod.
Well, yeah, what's up, everybody? Welcome, bro. The neutral site.
Right.
Hey, everybody. I'm here in Midtown Manhattan, undisclosed location, with my buddy and co-host, the great Jamal Murphy, holding it down at the arena. What arena is that with Reggie Miller in the background?
This was, I don't remember the year, but this is, I think you were there. I think this was in the Western Regional when Gonzaga and Florida State were out there.
Oh, yeah. You were out there, too, I think, that year, right?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Those pictures come in handy, you know?
Yeah. And, of course, in somewhere in Manhattan, got the great Steve Wilson. Steve, what's going on?
Still going, man. We're still here. So, you know, grateful for that. Good to see you guys.
Yeah. Tell us about Baltimore, man. You said you were playing down in Baltimore.
Yeah. Played this past weekend, July 4th weekend, at the Keystone Corner, the famed Keystone Corner, which, of course, was originally in San Francisco and owned by Todd Barkin, who was an NEA jazz master, the highest honor for jazz music in America. And Todd is running the Keystone Corner. Now in Baltimore, the new Keystone Corner. It's a great venue, supper club, really big space, A-list talent along with regional talent. And they got a great lineup coming through, including Ron Carter's quartet, Patrice Rushen's quartet.
Oh, wow. When is that?
That's Patrice is going there, I think, sometime this month. I think Ron is there sometime in August.
Oh.
Along with a lot of other great jazz luminaries. So and we had a great time, man. It was I've done things are opening up again in live performances in larger and smaller venues, outdoor concerts, indoor concerts, and COVID compliant, whatever the local exactly, that's up for interpretation.
Don't die here.
That's pretty much it, yeah. So dare to go in if you're not vaccinated, but things are on a good track overall, you know. But as we will discuss and have been discussed, you know, you can't take anything for granted still, man. So while we're glad to see it come back, things come back, we don't want to take anything for granted. So got to be careful.
Yeah. So Todd was at the Jazz Lincoln Center, right? He was always an impresario and all that?
Yeah, he was there for quite a while, and he left there a few years ago, and he partnered with a celebrity chef whose name I can't remember at the moment, but to reopen the Keystone Corner in Baltimore. And it's been a really great venue for revitalizing the Inner Harbor, and they get good support down there. People are coming out, supporting the club. It's on a good track.
So do you have to make I was just in Baltimore. In fact, I was thinking of taking another driving trip down there soon. What are the protocols? Do you have to make reservations? Seating?
Yeah, you can make reservations. I think they're fully open now. I think they were limited for a while, but I think it's fully open. But you could probably just walk in. But depending on who you're going to see, reservations are recommended. So, it's a great venue, man, and a great location. So if you're going to stay overnight, there's a bunch of hotels across the street and all of that. You know, good restaurants, the whole bit.
That's great. I've had, because Baltimore, you know, did you ever go to Baltimore at the, famous ballroom?
Oh, is that what the Left Bank Jazz Society?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's what it is. The Left Bank Jazz Society.
I did play those functions a couple of times, man. Actually on the campus of Morgan State. That was back in the 80s, I think, or 90s. Okay. And that's down home affair, man. BYOB.
Yeah.
You know, pork rinds, the whole bit.
I know, the whole bit, man. No, it was great. And I was working at the Baltimore Sun at the time. And was the quote unquote jazz critic, you know. And yeah, man, every Sunday was like, man, it was great. And they brought in some great shows.
They sure did. Yeah. Yeah.
I saw Mingus there, and man, he didn't curse me out. in retrospect, he must have, you know, like how a lion, like, just has pity on you or some shit. Right. I ain't gonna eat this motherfucker. You know,
he didn't go off on you.
No, man. I maybe had one question. I knew it was smart, and I forgot what it was. You know, but it was like he was cool. You know.
Wow.
That's it. But I knew, you know, I knew when to stop.
Just get out.
Right.
And just like, well, thank you, Mr. Man. And in fact, I interviewed Groove Holmes there too.
Wow.
Holmes, and I wrote a column about Groove Holmes. That's when I was with the Afro. It's like 1973 or something. I interviewed Groove Holmes. And then that Groove was talking about, you know, crying the blues, you know, we ain't making no money, blah, 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 blah. Then Elvin Jones was out. I remember I interviewed Elvin Jones and told him what Groove had said. And he was the essential. He said, "Well, you don't get in this business to make money or something like that." You know, whatever it was, it was kind of even then I had mastered the art of like starting shit. You know.
Yeah. Oh, that's great! You got to interview those cats, man. That's.
Yeah, but I'll come back down though, man. Now I'm glad to know that, because Baltimore really is a very good underrated jazz town, man. It's really, they produce a lot of musicians.
That's right.
Some heard, some, yeah, you know, I guess, I don't know, Steve, maybe that's just like by any place, right? Where you got a lot of talent.
Yeah, yeah, and it's great talent there, man. Still, a lot of, you know, few of the younger cats that are still living there. Warren Wolf.
Warren Wolf, right.
Yeah, he's still there, of course. And Sean Jones, great trumpeter, who's running the program now at Peabody.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He relocated there 3 years ago, and he's doing an amazing job of building the program, and he's a presence on the scene, and he's also building up the jazz community too. So, Tim Green, great alto player, Dennis Chambers, great drummer, played with P-Funk and Don Scofield. He's there. So yeah, man, it's a great hotbed of music and talent.
Cool. So. You got to have, you know, you already kind of referenced it. You got to have some kind of mixed feelings about getting back into full, you know, full capacity places. And, Keystone Corner is one of those that's open full now. I mean, how do you feel like performing in that environment? You got to be happy, but at the same time,
sad.
you know, it's a mixed feeling, man, because obviously we, you know, like, for instance, when we played with Buster's Quartet, which has been together for almost 20 years, we haven't seen each other, man. And since 2019, the band hadn't played together since 2019.
Wow.
So we're thrilled to be back together. Pianist George Colligan flew out from Portland, where he lives, Portland, Oregon. And that was his first airplane trip since COVID, since 2019. So we're all happy to be back together, of course, and happy to be playing in front of people and people who are hungry for the music, hungry to, congregating. And but and we all felt safe
Right.
because we're vaccinated. But then again, now you got this Delta virus, and there's a lot of questions about that. And so, you just don't want to take it for granted. I still go into places wearing my mask
Right.
until someone says it's cool, or until I can suss it out. I whatever it is, I just walk in. Whenever I walk into a place, hotel, store, whatever, I just put the mask on because, one, I want to be cool, and I don't want to make anybody feel weird.
Right.
So I'm still, being cautious.
Wow. Yeah. Speaking of cautious, the Milwaukee Buck. I know that's like a man. When you talk about a nothing series, man. Like,
You think it's over, Bill?
well,
Are you calling it
I don't know. I mean, as we speak today, Friday. The Bucks are down 0-2,
over? Right.
and we overreact
Right.
every single game. If they win, so
Especially nowadays with Twitter and everything, it's just crazy. Like
I
one
know.
after game one, it's over. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
And
yeah, yeah. Then
after
they
game two, it's definitely over. I don't care, home or
right,
away.
exactly. But I don't know. I mean, Giannis, the brother's playing great, after what seemed like a devastating knee injury and all that. Yeah, man, I think from the seemed like Milwaukee, Phoenix just has a really good team. I am getting a little fatigued with the whole Chris Paul thing. I mean,
Well, I've been pleased with that.
I appreciate it, but it's like, come on, man. I mean, but again, I know that's what we do. So
Right.
I get it. I get it. What do y'all think? Are y'all engaged in the series?
Yeah, I'm engaged. I'm a basketball fanatic, so regardless. But I mean, it's a weird season because everybody's gotten hurt. I was gonna ask you if this is the asterisk season. Just half joking, really. I don't think anybody deserves an asterisk. But and no one really remembers, right? 5 years from now, when Phoenix will have, Phoenix or Milwaukee will have a ring, we're not gonna remember every team that had injuries. But I mean, this is the in the moment. This is the weirdest year I've seen in a long time.
Well, were you weird in the
Like
last year?
Brooklyn was injured, Philly was injured, the Clippers were injured.
Do you think this season was weirder than last season in the bubble? That was pretty weird too.
Well, that was more weird. But I think, there were less injuries, so it seemed, more, fair in terms of the competition. Now, I mean, you talk about Phoenix being a great team. I mean, yeah, they were the second team in the West, the second seed in the West all season.
Without Kyrie, I mean, without
Right.
Kawhi, they
Right.
didn't
But
have to play against Kawhi.
they beat a Lakers team basically without AD and LeBron hobbled. They beat Denver, which without Jamal Murray, they took care of business there. And then they beat the Clippers in six games. It wasn't an easy series without Kawhi. So, I mean, people. To me, I just look at that. It wasn't the hardest road ever to the finals. And now, Milwaukee, who was another team that avoided injury, and all of a sudden their best player gets injured. So we'll see. But like you said, Giannis is playing. He had 42 points last night on that knee. So I don't think it's over. I think Milwaukee's also a very good home team. I think those. And Middleton and Drew Hamilton and Drew Holiday are really like, they're not superstars. They're kind of like every other game they show up.
Right, right.
Figure at home is where they'll probably show up. So I don't think the series is over.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jay Murph, on all of that. Obviously, Holiday and they didn't have a great game last night.
Right.
So I mean, certainly now, Giannis is playing. He's playing great, and playing the way he should be playing all the time, with attacking the back. He doesn't, though he did hit some three pointers last night, though he shouldn't have to, but Right. If he played with that kind of aggression all the time, man, it's, you know, I mean, he's a fantastic player. He's an amazing talent. And I don't know that that team is always coached so well, by the way. The coaching is questionable.
Yeah, you're right. I think you're right.
You know, because they were lucky to get to that series, man. I mean, you know, some of the stupid stuff they were doing against Brooklyn and, hey, come on. But I mean, this is Phoenix's time, all things considered. I think it's their time. Obviously, you know, Chris Paul, you know, we all want to see him get it, you know, 16 years. He deserves it. But, what I'm really enthused about is all the young talent, you know, that Phoenix has, particularly Ayton. Ayton has really grown with every game, man, literally. I'd still like to see him bulk up a little bit, but he's starting to play more physical. He's got a lot of finesse to his game, which is great. But I think throughout the season, he's going to need to be more physical to be a real, more intimidating presence. But I really love what he's been doing, man. What was it, the game, first game, what did he get, 19 rebounds?
Yeah.
I mean, wow, you know. So, but again, you know, we're not talking about 19 rebounds against LA or a fully manned Clippers. So we'll see. But I love the way this team has been evolving. I picked them to win in five.
Oh, wow.
You know, so, I mean, they may sweep, but I picked
them. They could sweep now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or they could do what they call the gentleman sweep.
I don't see it sweep, though. I just can't. Because those guys they're not going to hit shots on the road like they did at home. Especially last night, they were on fire.
Oh, they were on fire, no question. Walker
played pretty well. Well, Giannis played great. Right. And, you know, Milwaukee was here and there, as they sometimes are. But, I'll be shocked if they get swept. Because a lot of it is Phoenix, too. They're a very good team, but I don't think they're some kind of juggernaut.
You know, I agree.
You think Milwaukee is?
No, but I think Milwaukee's a good team, a good team. I don't think Milwaukee gets there if Brooklyn was healthy, or Philly probably, or maybe even if Trae Young didn't get hurt. You know, who knows?
Right.
But they do. You know, Middleton's capable. Holiday's capable of playing much better than he did last game. So right. I think at home, you know, home cooking is different. You know, especially for those type of guys like Middleton and
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, I'm still in COVID mode, man. I'm watching everything, you know. So, and what I've been doing, I've been rewatching Game of Thrones and a couple other things. So I'll take the game to watch like 2 or 3 in the morning, or about even when I wake up. You know, I'll watch it. I won't, you know, hear anything. Then I'll watch the game. And what I did with some of the earlier series, I would just watch and speed it up to see what the score was. And then if it was like out of hand,
don't even watch it.
But if it was like one day, like when the Clippers beat Phoenix, mm-hmm. I thought they were going to lose. I said, what? You know, so I watched like the third, fourth quarter. And I was like, oh, wow, man, it's great. So that's been kind of enjoyable. So I get to watch Game of Thrones and whatever else I'm watching, and then, you know, watch the real game.
Right. So, I want to ask you guys, what do you think about Paul George's performance during these playoffs?
Like
roller coaster.
I found myself saying every time, playoff P. Yeah. I think
he helped himself because he played, you know, he had a couple very good games. He played well enough to push Phoenix to the 6 without Kawhi. So I think, you know, no one thought, you know, he was just getting so much bad press. I mean, basically people saying he wasn't even a number two.
Jamal.
I mean, he wasn't even a number two guy. He at least showed that he's capable of being
the
a
man
number
missed two foul shots.
He did.
They could have won that series. I mean, that game split in Phoenix.
He's not that guy.
God.
But he was better than he was in the bubble. I'll tell you that.
Oh, well, definitely.
Yeah, well, that's such a low bar.
Exactly. That's my point. He's not as bad as we thought he was.
Did you? I know we probably talked about this again. You know, now that we see the difference, the travel. Remember, everybody was talking about Tyler Hero and all these cats. So I wonder if that makes such a difference of traveling. You know, in the bubble, it was like AAU. No, there was no traveling. Right. Everybody playing on the same rims, and I thought that maybe that leveled the playing field. I guess now we see the grind of, you know, playing, have to get on a plane and all that. And, you know, and you talk about injuries, man. You know, that's why I think of, again, this $40 million slave thing where, you know, and the players, I guess, agreed to it, but basically would be grinding themselves into, like, into powder, you know, like playing every night, back to back, a condensed schedule. You know, I think that's why you got all those injuries. So I guess my question was, do you think the competition, or what do you think about the competition last year in the finals versus this year?
That's hard to answer, man. I mean, simply, well, I don't know. It's really hard to answer, you know, because, you know, these set of circumstances that happened last year with COVID and, you know, like you said, playing, in an enclosed space in the bubble. Now, this year, I definitely think that the ending of last season and the beginning of this season had something to do with the injuries. There's no question, because we haven't seen anything like this before.
Right.
So, of course, that'll be evaluated, probably be reevaluated, you know, going into next season. So we'll see. But think about this. I mean, even with the end of this season, particularly for these two teams, and the beginning of the next season, that's not so far away.
Right.
It really isn't, considering what these, you know, compact back-to-back seasons. So this still could be played out even more so. I mean, these guys, what are they going to do for their conditioning in the offseason is going to have a lot to do with that. Will they get the proper rest? Will they get the proper conditioning? Like we talked about Anthony Davis. You know, something, apparently something's not going, you know, correct, or he needs to adjust something with his conditioning. So I think that still can be played out, will be played out.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's different. I enjoyed this season more, even with the injury. It just was a little more normal. The travel, I think, is big. And then the fans came back at the end. So at this point, it looks almost normal in terms of, like, the playing conditions. But there's no question that the bubble had a lot to do with the injuries this year. I mean, just look at the final four teams in the bubble, all had big time injuries and couldn't really make it back to where they were previously. You had the Lakers, you know what happened with them. The Heat couldn't get it together all season long. You know, they had injuries. They never could get healthy. They get swept in the first round by Milwaukee. That wasn't the same team we saw last year in the bubble. Then you had Denver, I think, was another team who had Jamal Murray get injured, you know, during the regular season. So there's no question it took its toll. Then again, this year, it's they get a little more time this year, but it's not back to normal, right? They're still trying to catch up. So it's still about, you know, a few weeks to a month less than they would normally get in the off season. And then you add that with something I want to talk about anyway, is the Olympics. So you got the Olympics coming, and you got guys, Booker is on the Olympic team. He's supposed to just fly over there right after the finals are over. You got Drew Holiday and Middleton playing on the Olympics. You have Kevin Durant on the Olympic team.
Durant, yeah, man.
You know, you have James Harden one to play in the Olympics, despite him. Now he's over in Paris doing who knows what.
Yeah, what was that story? I don't want to lose my train of thought about that question. What was Harden? What the hell?
It was really a non-story because they said that police stopped to question him.
About what?
I don't know. He wasn't even arrested, so I don't know why they even were talking about it. But he was out in Paris at the fashion show with, like, Kanye West and
maybe that's why he stopped.
Little baby, you know. So it was just a weird looking scene out there.
Brother, man, I do think I'm going to go to Paris. I would like to go to Paris in November.
Paris or Tokyo?
Hell no, I'm not going near Tokyo.
I want to ask about the Olympics. Like, what are we doing here? We know they just announced that there are going to be no fans. at the events. I know, Steve, I know you've been out there a few times, right? Perform.
Yeah. I've been talking with my friends from Japan, and they're all very upset about what's going on there. As a matter of fact, one friend of mine, she's a nurse. She works here in the States, but she went back recently to bury her father. And she was saying they're doing everything wrong. They're just doing everything wrong there. And I think part of the deal is, you know, Japanese culture, they're not usually not very flexible, you know, in terms of once they go with a plan A, that's it. So they don't really adjust to things, you know, when things change drastically. And then she said,
like Buno.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so that's why they're so far behind in the vaccines. And of course, because of the Japanese culture, so much efficiency, it's like antithetical to what you think they'd be doing. But here we are. And they're way behind in vaccinations. And they've just refused to adjust. And man, now they've got the variant there. They just shouldn't be having these games. Basically, it's all about money. They've invested over $15 billion into this thing, and they figured, well, they want to get something out of it, but they can't even have spectators, so they can't make up any of that money. I mean, you know,
they're probably going to lose money. They're going to lose money. Most Olympics lose money.
Yes,
and they have facilities that become white elephants. You know.
Yeah. So it's all about saving face, I guess, to whatever degree they think they can. But it makes no sense. Because think about it. They're going to be flying in these athletes from all over the world, going into this place where most people are not vaccinated. Duh. End of story. You know, they just shouldn't be doing it, period.
So why are other countries doing it? Why are we doing it? I mean, I know the money aspect.
But what's the financial? In other words, I mean, I get it. As an athlete, you know, you've been training, you were supposed to go last year, and you want to compete. You've been training, so you want to compete. So I guess we could all understand that, the competition aspect. And beyond that, I mean, we say money. Okay, we get Tokyo. Yeah, we get Japan. They want to save face. They spend all this money, all that. But you're right. What do we get out of the United States? I guess it boils down to the athletes.
And TV. Because we're still going to.
TV rights.
NBC is still going to be covering the stuff people are going to watch for American athletes in America.
Yeah. I mean, now, are they doing the bubble? Are they doing any bubble protocols there? I don't know.
Because if there are no fans, it's almost like a bubble, right?
Well, the Olympic Village typically is kind of like a bubble. But now, you know, not everybody. I was just seeing Christine Brennan, USA Today, wrote a column about the swimmer who said he's not vaccinated, doesn't plan to get vaccinated. You know, so.
Swimmer?
So there are a lot of, I'm sure he's not the only athlete of all right. the thousands of athletes who are going. You know, there's not 100% vaccination rate. Yeah. So you got to figure there are people for whatever reason who aren't vaccinated.
Oh my God!
So no. It's basically Russian roulette.
Yeah, basically Russian roulette.
All the athletes from the red states, they're not going to be vaccinated.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and no, to me, if I'm on that team, if I'm on any Olympic team, and I'm thinking, okay, just knowing that there are going to be some people in that village who are not vaccinated. I'm sorry. I'm gonna. I get it. You're an athlete. You've trained. This is it for you. But is it worth the risk? No, absolutely not. You know, not to me.
There's just so much misinformation. I mean, half the information out there is misinformation. So you know, these athletes think they're young. Some people have already, like a Kevin Durant, for instance, has had it already. So, you know, people walk around thinking, oh, I had it already, I'm good, or I'm young, I'm good, or I'm vaccinated, nothing can happen. And then the people who aren't vaccinated, you know, they're like, well, I haven't gotten it yet. Does it even exist? You know, it's just so crazy right now. And, that's another, you know, we talk about Durant and those guys coming off an injury wanting to play, and is it good for them as far as next season is concerned, but just based on injury? But, you know, I mean, what about if you get sick?
Yeah. Now, I wonder if they will be applying the quarantine requirement to these athletes. Because I think if, you know, if a regular citizen goes there, you're supposed to quarantine for like 10 days or something. As a matter of fact, if you go as a regular citizen, I think they take you to a hotel room and you have to stay in that room.
Right.
You can't go out for food, anything. They bring you food or whatever. You can't, you know, you just can't go there, go through the airport and customs, and you can't do that. So I'm wondering if that's going to be applied to these Olympic teams. I don't know. A lot of questions, man.
Do we know why so few people are vaccinated in Japan? It was like 6% of it.
Yeah, I asked about that, and I mean, I don't know that, but I guess just because of their own whatever bureaucracies that happen, as you know, the United States bought up a lot of the vaccines. In the very beginning, the United States and the UK and other countries. I don't know if Japan didn't put in their bid. What I don't understand is that, you know, in the very beginning, Korea was really ahead of most.
Right.
So I don't know if Korea and Japan didn't coordinate. I have no idea. I'm sure a lot of it boiled down to just cultural and political issues of why they're behind. But
you know, I was hoping, Steve, to maybe the next podcast during the Olympics. If you know, Japanese musicians, you know, people you may know, I would love to have them on the show.
Sure. I do know about a few, yeah.
A lot of stuff we're talking about, from what they think about the games, I think it would be great, you know, to have your nursing friend or whatever, just on the show to talk about, you know, while the games are going on.
Sure. Yeah. I could definitely do that. It'd be great to get their perspective.
Yeah, I'd love to get that perspective.
They really know the nuances of it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Because there are certain things that you're asking and we're asking that we don't know.
Right.
You know. So I think that would. I really, really would love to hear that.
Back to the States.
Yeah.
Some of the drama that's been going on. We want to, I guess, briefly talk about the whole ESPN situation.
Rose screen goes black.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We just lost Bill, I think. But but the you know, the little controversy with Maria Taylor and Rachel Nichols, where they ended up removing Rachel Nichols from the NBA sideline reporter position that she had. To me, it was just a, you know, this could happen in any profession. You know, Rachel Nichols is respected. You know, a lot of people have always considered her an ally, but it just comes down to, you know, like everybody's an ally until you come for their position, you know, or their kid's position, you know. So, and I don't, if I were white, who knows? You know what I'm saying? Like, can I judge? I don't know. I don't even know if I can judge.
Well, obviously, since you know, I work for, you know, The Undefeated, which is run by and supported by ESPN and Disney, and Disney supports the Roden Fellows and blah 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 and all that kind of stuff. I will say this, you know, I love Maria Taylor.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I love Maria Taylor, and Maria Taylor, we've had her on our show. Mm-hmm. She's smart, she's bright. She has an athletic background. Her credentials are beyond reproach. I mean, she's just bright and rising, and she's part of a group of young black women. You know, we had Taylor Rooks on the show. I mean, there's some sisters, man, who are coming up who are just dynamic.
Right.
You know, dynamic. And they're coming. They're coming for you. And as always happens, with old heads, you've been used to doing your job and all that. And before you know it, man, you blink of an eye, there's a whole new cadre of young people coming for your gig.
Right.
And it's not always pleasant, and it's often surprising because, you know, you're doing the work, man, and you not thinking about how old you are or whatever. You're just doing the work. And if you're in a corporate situation, you know, we're all just part of a machinery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all part of the machinery. Some people are fortunate. There are a fortunate few who get to leave on their own terms.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. So, okay, you know, but most people don't. you know, and it's probably disconcerting. It's probably, you resent it, you know, but the shit happens to, you know, a whole bunch of folks, man, you know, a whole bunch of folks, you know, that, you know, so, but I think I'd rather look at the glass full and look at people like Maria, Taylor Rooks, Malika, man, I mean, who's, you know, took Rachel's place as a sideline reporter, you know, Malika's great. You know, she's great, as was Rachel.
Right.
I mean, you know, so, yeah, man, it's just one of those things that in our business, you know, and then the thing about in our business, we tend to like, we tend to care about it. Right. But a lot of other people, they just want to see the show. You know, they want to see next person up. You know, they don't really care. You know, I mean, I think of Pam Oliver. You think of somebody who I'd love to have on the show. You know, Pam Oliver has been doing sideline reporting for decades, assistant, mm-hmm. who's just great and mm-hmm. has been passed over, has been screwed, has been humiliated, but through it all has basically come through that fire, you know, and with a toughness and a sense of grace and class and all that. You know, Maria, same thing, grace and class. You know, Taylor Rooks, grace and class. You know, you look at Malika. She didn't ask for this.
Right.
You know, but she's prepared. It's like right. I was looking at the pride of the Yankees when Wally Pipp right. asked for a day off. They said, you know, he asked, you know, the day off. Lou Gehrig came in, you know. That was it. Curtain.
He was ready to go.
You know, I'm trying to think, can you guys think of anything like that? And I've been sports or whatever. Or I don't know, even in music or whatever. I guess music or the arts a little different because it's not like Romare Bearden is waiting in the, you know, waiting right. in the wings and then takes Jacob Lawrence's place, you know.
Right.
But can you guys think of anything where there was an athlete, a star who injured or whatever, and then somebody came play who became like a legend?
Well, I guess the recent history, Tom Brady. Right. You know, that's Drew
right.
Bledsoe.
Right.
You know, I mean,
that was a prop.
I mean, look at it. Tom Brady was a what? What round was he? It was a low round, right?
Yeah,
was,
yeah. Like,
you know, I mean, I knew, no one even knew of him coming out. Who's this guy?
Right.
You know, I didn't even know he. What was he? Second string on Michigan's team or something? I'm just like, yeah. What?
Yeah.
So you never know. I mean, but you know, I think in this context. You mentioned Pam Oliver, and it would be great to get her perspective, someone like her, of course, Jemele Hill, because, you know, being women in the business and what they've had to endure and just to see yeah. this. I mean, all I got to say is like, well, Rachel, she has to own it. You know, she yeah. said it, got to own it,
right.
you
yeah.
know, and it was recorded inadvertently, whatever, but you got to own it. That's the bottom line. She spoke yeah. her mind and just own it.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. the only thing for me personally with Rachel Nichols, who I like and is great, but it's like, why go there with it? Why do you imply that the other person is a diversity hire when we all know, like you said, that Maria Taylor is just great. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't care if she was white, black, green, or whatever. Maria Taylor is very, very talented. Probably the most talented, in my opinion, person doing that particular job. Like, you know, at least in her age, you know, definitely among the younger people, but maybe in general. So I just think, you know, the more to the story, I agree with you, Bill, is that Maria Taylor is really, really good. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, maybe there's room for both of them. You know, maybe there's a male, you know, person out there that they need to kick out. It's not about race, you know. You know what I mean? Like, why not just say, oh, you know, she's great, you know, and I'm great. So
get, right. let's get all, we can all be great.
Yeah, yeah. So. No, you know, and Bill, you had mentioned like in the music industry, we see this all the time because young talent is constantly emerging. And I've seen, man, I remember seeing an interview with Sammy Davis Jr. talking about this 40 years ago, seeing young talent just go right past the plateaus that he was able to achieve. But that's just the nature of the business. That's right. Just the nature of things. I see some of my students, former students, you know, getting signed to record deals, record companies that, you know, that may not have been available to me or my colleagues. And you know what? I'm happy for them.
Right.
I'm happy for them, man, because they get an opportunity. Your opportunity comes when it comes.
Right.
And, you know, when you see that happen to somebody else, you can't knock that. You know, so to Jamal's point, yeah, why did she have to go there? You know, especially being a woman in the business, you know, just like say, hey, great for her. It could have ended there. You know, like, why does that have to be? But that speaks to another issue that's been, right. that we're dealing with in these times, you know, with white America, black America. There's a portion of white America that sees, oh, well, if someone of a minority ethnicity is getting an opportunity, now all of a sudden that's a threat.
It comes in my sense.
Yeah, that, no, that's not what it is, you know. Yeah. But, hey, like I said, she put it out there. She has to own it now. She's stuck with it. So whatever consequences come, you know, and she, like I said, she's a great talent, but she's going to own that. And now will that affect her status going forward? We'll see. You know?
And Bill, to your point about who, you know, we tend to care about this, do other people really care? I think people do care just because it hit a nerve that all people have to, that a lot of people have to deal with this type of story in other industries or in other walks of life. Like, you know, I've been out, you know, to a couple of things recently, and it's like, to me, it seems like that's all anyone wants to talk about, particularly black people.
Right. You know, they you know, I, as you were speaking, I just remember Don, the late Don Imus. I remember, you know, his shtick. He got on Gwen Ifill and mentioned me.
Mm.
He called Gwen Ifill, it really just a disparaging term. Then they said Williams, he wrote, oh yeah, he's that minority hire at the New York Times, you know. And I guess I took it then as kind of like, you know, hey man, you know, whatever, I'm here, right. you know. Right. But you know, but it's that kind of, you know, it's that kind of mentality. Like, oh, you went to an Ivy League school. Oh, yeah, you're black at an Ivy League school. Oh, well, yeah, that's because you got in because, you know, a minority and all that.
Which is like so typical of like historically white America, like to put it on the black person, right? Like we're percentage wise, it's the hardest thing to do to get into like an Ivy League school. Right. And then you say to that person, oh, you got it. It was easy for you because you're black. When the truth of the story is you could look at any white person who goes to an Ivy League school and say, oh, he just got in because his you know, his father knew somebody or they had money. It's and you could just say that. You could blindly say that, ignorantly say that, and you would be right 50% of the time.
Right, well, remember this whole scandal, right? This whole scandal last year where these people were paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to get their kids into these schools.
Yeah. You know, yeah, I watched that movie you recommended, Bill, by the way. The movie they made about that?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, on Netflix?
Yeah, incredible, man.
It's incredible.
Wow, what? Incredible. The links, I mean, it's so deep. Everyone should see that. Everybody.
Yeah. What was the name of that again?
I'm trying to remember.
It's on Netflix. It might be whatever.
I forget the name of it too, but it was like
whatever, something.
Yeah. But it was like, it was eye-opening, a little demoralizing. Because, you know, when these things come to light, you know, it's like, damn, you know, the. You know, anyway, but yeah, so just to kind of put a bow on that, it's unfortunate, you know, I hate to see anybody's career get damaged like that, like Rachel, whatever, you know, but I think that I tell young students, man, you know, like there's some Roden Fellows in town today, and, you know, tell them, listen, man, you know, as soon as you get out of bed, you know, and leave your house apartment building, you're on stage, you know, you're on stage. And probably when you're on the phone, when you're on your cell phone, all these cell phone towers, we're probably in the United States, probably one of the most eavesdropped upon populations in the world. We're probably the most spied upon, you know, so you just take that under advisement, you know, whatever you say, be intentional about it. And if, you know, my whole thing is that if you were talking about to somebody, whatever, over the phone, whatever, would I want to see this in headline? Mm-hmm. What I'm about to say, would I want to see this in headline? Would I want to see, you know, and if you say, nah, then don't say it. Right. You know, wait till we see each other in person, you know, over lunch. And then if they spying on that, fuck, you lost anyway. But
you got to pat them down, make sure they don't have a wire.
You
know?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, the movie we're talking about on Netflix is Operation Varsity Blues. College admissions on Netflix. Definitely.
Yeah. Everybody should see that movie, man.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But, you know, as we close, the one place with blacks, remember, they'd always say, we always get, you're only there because. But now, when you look at the NFL and NBA, you know, pretty much nobody says that. Pretty much nobody says that. Now, you can say that Coach Bud in Milwaukee, or some coach, that you only got that position because you're white. But pretty much, if you're an NBA player, NFL player, you're pretty much there because you brought it, you know. Mm.
Because we can see it, too. We saw it. We saw you in college. We saw you in high school. We knew the talent you had. It's evident. There's no subjectivity to it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like if there was a kid who didn't make it, it would be a problem. Like we saw you at a lower level in college running a 4.3 and, you catch every pass and somehow you didn't make it we'd be, what? What's going on? So that's because we can see it. But now if you go to coaching where the subjectivity comes involved, then they do say it and they're going to start saying it more. Now, because, after George Floyd, you saw how many college basketball coaches black college basketball coaches were hired. Over 50% of the jobs that are open went to black coaches. So they're going to have to show and prove this year. And they're going to, all kind of people are going to be saying things about how they got the job just because of this or that. And then now in the NBA is kind of following suit a little bit because there were 7 coaching changes this offseason. 5 have been filled. And 4 have already gone to black coaches.
Right.
We got Billups with the Blazers, Kidd with the Mavs, Udoka with Boston. Reports are that Jamal Mosley is going to get the job.
In Orlando.
Wow. And even Wes Unseld Jr. is expected to get the Washington job.
Wow.
So all of a sudden you could have 12 coaches, 12 black coaches in the 30-team league. That's 40%.
And it should be.
Compared to last season where we only had 7.
Yeah, it's just so amazing, man. I mean, I guess we all look at this. I look at this as evolution, just as an evolution, not it's an evolution. And you got a league like this, man. I was about that this morning. For the past 3 decades, you've got this incredible pool of young black players who are now out and been coaching here and there and there. And again, this gets back to privilege. The white guys have been used to like always getting the jump ball. Despite the league is 70% black players and have been that way for 3 decades, they're used to getting the jump ball. They're used to always getting the job. Mm-hmm. Now when this stuff changes like that and you see this incredible pool of sharp young guys, you just can't keep doing that. Right. Particularly when your product is predominantly black guys, they're looking at you and say, wait a minute, you mean to tell me that I'm doing all this, going through the bubble, playing like injury and all that, and you mean when I'm done, I can't get a job in your league that the job automatically goes to some white guy? And I think these guys are astute enough to, and the owners, man, it's not like you own your product is like fucking, car hubs or, hubcaps or like stoves or something. Your product is black, these young black people. Mm-hmm. And you can't fuck them. You can't screw them like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can't screw them like that. So, So I think that particularly in our industry, a lot of people are going to be like, who've been used to just automatically getting stuff, going to react when they don't. I think that's.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not surprising, right? Like, we shouldn't be surprised about these stories because, it's a shock to their system. I mean, this is also part of the process.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's like, guys, we dominated the press box. We are always the guys. We were always, and then when I said, no, man, we need more women. And that means that, yeah, some of you guys ain't gonna get the promotion you thought you should just always be getting, you know, cause you just a guy. And you're right, there are gonna be women in the locker room, you know, not just you guys, you know. So mm-hmm. it's all and that's why you see a guy like this clown who's in the White House, I don't even remember the cast, but you know, feeding into that, tapping into that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're tapping into that. That mm-hmm. I'm here to protect your privilege.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. so anyway.
Yeah. You know, it'll be interesting to see how the NFL goes forward. Because as we've seen in last season, they stayed their course.
You're right.
So let's see what happens this round. Because, and what I would like to see is the players to stand up. If this doesn't change, the players need to stand up and say, okay, enough is enough.
Right.
You know, and I don't know why. Maybe they feel, Bill, maybe this backs to your $40 million slave, you know, theory, you know, and well, it's more than a theory, it's reality. I should call it a mindset, because are they going to empower themselves and each other? They need to stand up. Ultimately, these players say, no, we see what's going on here. It's time to change this. You have to change this. So we'll see how the NFL reacts to this wave.
Yeah, NFL's going to be tough.
No guaranteed contracts.
Right.
In the NFL, you know, but you're right, that's actually a great point. You kind of see the NBA reacting. Now, how's the NFL going to react? Because typically, cats are like, man, keep that trouble away from me.
right.
I got this last shot. They'll cut me on Monday. Right. If I play on Sunday, they'll cut me on Monday.
Yeah.
The NFL, that's a different culture, too. And I'm not saying the NBA has some of that in it, too. But the NFL is just, I mean, that's like ground zero.
Yeah. So that is a good thing. So we should, that's a good thing to keep our eye on. How coming this season, how are these cats going to react? You know, and then again, it gets to be my faith, the leadership of the Players Association. Mm-hmm. It's just, in this respect, it's just a waste of time. You know, DeMar's trying to rally the troops to, you know, on this type of issue.
Yeah, because this, to me, this is like about more than taking a knee this time.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
not going to get it.
That's not
you know. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, we know that ultimately it's ownership that can change the dynamic. But until then, you know, will these guys really stand up and make their voices heard and count? You know, so
that's right.
Yeah, especially the top tier guys. You know,
some
of the guys you just talked about, Bill, you know, without the guaranteed contracts. Okay, but the top tier guys, like the marquee players, they can make a difference, and they should.
Right. Yeah, so we'll see. So anyway, on that happy note basically, it's just you're basically challenging people. That's all
right. Our
culture, you know, our existence, Black existence in this country, has always been about challenging one decade after another. Challenging, you know, I keep thinking about my father, when he went, his grandmother, you know, we've always been tasked to force this country to live up to the creed of his foundation, you know, and it's not fun, you know, it's not, but so we'll see. We'll see if the NFL players, you know, kind of say, hey, man, enough is enough, like you said. So we'll also see if the Bucks say enough is enough and just allow themselves to get swept. Enough is enough.
I'm pretty
the
confident.
The summer is afoot.
I'm pretty confident they'll get game three. If game four, I'm worried about. Because, like I said, Middleton and Holiday, it's tough for them back-to-back games to show up.
Yeah. And like I said, man, you know, July, man, how much time do we have to vacation with our families, take some time off, you know? You know, come on. You know, and particularly, you know, we're going to lose a game six. I mean, hey, bye. Bye, Bobby.
But both of these teams, though, man, they got to win it now, because we already talked about the injuries. you know, you're never guaranteed to get back. And I think it's like extra.
It's tough.
You know, especially these two teams. You're not guaranteed.
Because this may be, I mean, Milwaukee was last time they were, I mean, what Kareem was there, right?
That's a 71, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, yikes. You know. If there are any miracles to be pulled off, you know. Yeah. Anyway, all right, guys, any last things, any last predictions or words of wisdom before we cut out, or have we exhausted all our wisdom?
Well, I want to give a quick props to Nicole Hannah-Jones.
Ah, there you go.
For playing it beautifully. It beautifully, man. She played it beautifully. So, and fantastic for Howard University, because it's high time that HBCUs are able to retain our best Black talent and best and brightest minds.
That's right.
And I just give big props to her for playing it just beautifully. And so props to Howard and Tony Jones. And to Tony Coates, because they hired him also. So props.
That's great. Now, they could have gone to Morgan, but.
Well, they could do a visiting thing. They're just down the street, you know.
Coates actually mentioned Morgan in a post recently. He said, you know, he was saying, yeah, you know, I know we're inseparable at Howard. You always talk about Howard. He was like, but I would have went to Morgan State if my parents didn't force me to get out of Baltimore.
That's right. Because I knew his dad, Paul Coates, who was actually, he was with the Panthers when I was at the Sun. It's a good thing. I do feel a little sorry for some of the students and teachers, Black faculty at University of North Carolina. But I think they understand what's at stake. You just can't, you know, you just can't be allow yourself to be devalued like that. You know, and actually Cornell West could have done the same thing. You know, he had the big fight at tenure at Harvard. And he could, you know, too bad he could have gone to Howard, or, you know, although Howard can't take everybody. There are more Black institutions than Howard.
Go to A&T or something.
Spread the love. Spread the love, man. Spread the love. Well, if anything, I hope the establishment will start to understand that the race card can cut both ways.
The interesting dynamic happening, though, in a lot of Black colleges, where one of my fellows called it the gentrification of HBCU. But you have more and more, there's some softball team at HBCU, they're all white.
Right.
You know, a lot of faculty, like you have white faculty teaching Black history, you know, being brought, you know, so not only are some Black people seeing HBCUs as an alternative, or you got a lot of white folks, you know, just like Washington Heights or, you know, this gentrification thing, man, is just, and you never thought about these HBCUs were our safe spaces. Now, all of a sudden, are they safe spaces anymore? You know, have these presidents encourage like white faculty, white students, you know, to come in. We'll give you scholarships. We'll, you know, I mean, it just never ends, man. You know,
Well, I know part of that is the funding issue too. And as I may have mentioned on one of the previous programs we did, you know, we talked about reparations. I think the real solution, reparations, is to one of them is to perpetually fund the HBCU. Because that way, you know that each generation coming through is going to have an equal shot at a good education. So if we want to talk about real reparations in a substantive way, that's one way to approach it.
Right. We just have to figure out how to let young Black kids get the opportunity. Because I can't say that. Because now, you're excluding white people? It's, the way you excluded us, you know. I agree 100%, you know. And I was talking to one of the fellows yesterday. I wouldn't know how it felt if I went to Morgan and like half the team was white or half the, you know, like that was not the experience I was looking for, you know.
I was at A&T, the baseball team was at least 50%.
50%?
At least.
Yeah.
And those guys were recruited?
That's like 90, late 90.
Yeah.
Wow. And those guys were recruited like from the local or from within the North Carolina, mostly from North Carolina, North Carolinians?
You know how cutthroat sports are. I mean,
yeah,
where they can play. And they found and they were able to find that niche and go play HBCUs. Because, like, you know, maybe the numbers weren't great in terms of black kids who were playing baseball.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was like it kind of filled a need for both parties.
Mm-hmm.
Struggle continues, as they said. All right, y'all. Listen, great Steve Wilson. Always great having you on the show. You're down there at the Jazz Standard.
Oh, this is the Vanguard, actually.
Oh, this is Vanguard. Oh, good.
Yeah, they'll be coming back in September. So.
Oh, good.
Just keep the light on for them.
I hope they, man. Are they still gonna be cramming people in? I would hope this pandemic would kind of elbow room, man.
Hey, it's all about the money, Bill. You know they're gonna cram them in.
Oh my God, cramming them in.
Just like the NFL.
Oh my, yeah.
That's it, man.
Well, you know, Reverend Forbes would always say that he talks about the triumph of mammon, you know, the triumph of money, and when money becomes the highest value. And I always say it, I echo him, but the true meaning of it did not really hit me until you see the consequences of people making decisions, not based on health, not but based on money. And you see people dying, people get sick, people whatever, because, and when your entire society is defined by that, is like your highest value is money. Man, that it sounds so, you know, so simplistic, mm-hmm. but the consequences are profound. So
mm-hmm.
good luck. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Jamal, hang in there.
Trying.
And all of our millions of listeners, be smart, be safe.
Protect yourself.
Protect yourself, because yes, trust me, the government, every decisions that are being made based on money, not on your health. So when you sit down making, you don't have to wonder why. The decision be based on money. You better make your decision based on health, your family's health, because you're on your own. All right, everybody, and keep praying. God bless.
That's yes, it. Indeed.
All right. Yes.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.